For SearchSAP.com, I'm Rob Westerveld. You're listening to SearchSAP news coverage of SAP Sapphire 2006 from Orlando, Florida. In this edition, SearchSAP speaks with Tomorrow Now CEO Andrew Nelson. Tomorrow Now is a third-party maintenance and support provider acquired by SAP in January of 2005. Tomorrow Now started out in 2002 as a PeopleSoft support provider. We'll ask Andrew about recent criticism aimed at Tomorrow Now. We'll also talk about the expansion of the SAP Safe Passage program to include Siebel customers. While Tomorrow Now is not directly involved in SAP Safe Passage, SAP uses Tomorrow Now as a leverage to migrate PeopleSoft, JD Edwards Retech, and now Siebel customers to SAP software. I started out asking Andrew Nelson what internal changes would take place within Tomorrow Now to begin supporting Siebel customers.
We have done a couple things, actually several different things. First, we've hired a global director for Siebel support, John Tanner. John Tanner has a demonstrated track record of leadership in global support. He came from Siebel. He had a fantastic track record of being innovative, of leading a team, and of providing outstanding customer support. He has product expertise and is someone that that we're going to leverage heavily to lead our team. We've also hired several additional Siebel folks. In total, I think right now we have got seven Siebel support experts in the various technology areas. We provide that support already today in English. We provide that support in all areas of technology. We've done a few things on the facilities and infrastructure and system side as well. We have a new Research Triangle Park office. It is
North Carolina?
In North Carolina, yes, here in the Americas region. It is our primary Siebel facility, and we will continue to hire Siebel expertise throughout the world as our demand requires it. Today, Siebel support is provided by the vendor in English only all around the world. We have that same capability. We will actually be enhancing the traditional vendor model that Siebel had by being open to providing additional language support. Today, we provide support for 12 languages around the world for PeopleSoft, JD Edwards. We have that capability right now. Even today, if it were important for Siebel to get more language support than they're getting today from the vendor, we could probably triage things in those 12 languages. If they want direct primary support engineer work on those languages, we're certainly open to providing that capability.
So now, that the North Carolina facility is not just dedicated to Siebel, right? It's also supports PeopleSoft.
We will certainly be open to hiring and allowing employees who do PeopleSoft and JD Edwards to be there, but right now it is exclusively a Siebel facility. So no, we actually already have it in place. You can go visit our employees there. It's something that we've been doing and building before we actually made the announcement.
Other than using the press, what are some ways that you can actually tap into the Siebel customer base? And you know, are you planning anything to try to reach out to them in any direct way?
Sure. I mean, Lon here heads up our marketing and communications. I'm sure he can get into a lot of details, but you know, the press analysts have been asking to talk to us. The press, obviously, we've had tremendous amount of press interest in, since this announcement, and even prior to the announcement with the Wall Street Journal, Forbes and others being very interested in talking to us. But also, just in general, our direct marketing campaigns, lead management, you know, all the things that we do to make long-term investments, to making sure people know their options, we're going to do with Siebel.
Now, that closer alignment with SAP, obviously, since you're now merged with them, has caused a little bit of difficulty for you in terms of, I think it was the Quest International User Group Conference, there was some difficulties there.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that our merger has caused that difficulty. I would say our success has caused that difficulty. Okay. SAP was at the Quest Conference. Right?
Oracle, officially? Officially?
SAP was officially invited to the Quest Conference. So that statement, whoever's making that statement, there's not a lot of factual legitimacy to that. SAP was there. Oracle is right here at Sapphire. Right? Why is Oracle here at Sapphire? Because SAP's customers value the database business. SAP is one of the largest resellers of Oracle business. And they listen to their customers. They realize that the customers value an Oracle database, and that in serving the customers makes it important for SAP to bring Oracle here. And frankly, the compelling interest in Oracle database business brings SAP applications to those types of Quest conference. The difference is tomorrow now is a true threat, long-term threat, to the core maintenance revenue, which, as everyone knows, there's not a Fusion product right now. The real strategy long-term for Oracle needs to be to retain all of these customers, to milk that maintenance, to charge 22% a year, even though they're not delivering new and, you know, major new release functionality to justify it, in our view, certainly, to justify that for a lot of the customers that are choosing us. And frankly, that threat and the 1% market share that we closed just last year alone in new business in PeopleSoft and JD Edwards, if you look at that 1% every year for 10 years, assuming we don't continue to grow at the rate we have grown and we just stagnate, that has a huge impact on Oracle's future and the original justification for even the acquisition. So I can understand why they lost their independence and turned it into the Quest dependent user group instead of the independent users group.
But since you were acquired by SAP, how many new customers were brought on board that decided not to make the switch from their respective, from PeopleSoft or JD Edwards to SAP? In other words, how many people have just signed on just to have your support services?
Lots
that's,
of customers.
That's what you build the Siebel edition.
Well,
the fact that you'll be able to support them at a cheaper price.
Yeah, it's actually the same value proposition to Siebel as with PeopleSoft and JD Edwards. There's really no difference. You cut your maintenance in half. You get 30-minute response time as a worst-case scenario. Mm-hmm. In general, our customers are getting responded to by an expert with many years of experience within 5 to 7 minutes of putting in a serious fix. Case request. That value proposition doesn't go away. The proactive delivery of tax and regulatory updates into the CRM solutions, we've already been providing that for PeopleSoft, been providing that for JD Edwards, we're now going to be providing it for Siebel. So the real, I think we talked about the safe passage, clearly to get the word out initially, and the strength of that is going to come from 300 sales folks on the SAP side. But frankly, for us, that's just another marketing channel. You know, that's just another lead channel. And, you know, we also have our independent marketing. We've had strong growth in both sides of that business. So I certainly wouldn't characterize it. I think originally you mentioned, you know, are we hurt by any of that? No. I mean, this is just more access, more channels to a market that is demanding an alternative today to paying premium rates and questioning the value of 22% a year.
Were you able to bring any customers on board, though, that are just using Tomorrow Now for support at this point?
Absolutely. I would say the majority of our customers are Tomorrow Now standalone, what we would call Tomorrow Now standalone customers.
And that's not to say that at some point they can decide to make the switch.
That's right. That's the beauty. If you really look at our value proposition, we put customers in control of their ERP future. We put customers in control of the support they're getting. We put customers in control of redirecting innovation dollars from, you know, how much better can I cut a paycheck to maybe how much better can I do something else in my business. Give it back to shareholders. We allow them to take the savings from pre-funding Fusion, if you will, or pre-funding whatever the next release is. If you can't ask, where's the value? How am I going to make money or save money? And answer that question with confidence, then you should probably be taking that off the table and redirecting those funds somewhere else.
How do you respond to this? The independent third parties support for providers obviously say their independence. They could do the very same thing that Tomorrow Now is doing, only they provide the service independently of SAP, and therefore there would be a cost savings there, and you wouldn't be pushed to go. You wouldn't be pushed to go to SAP.
No, actually, our contracts put the customer in complete control of their ERP future. If the customer wants to go back to Fusion, or go to Fusion, because there's nothing to leave right now other than the vendor. But if the customer wants to go to Fusion, assuming it ever comes out, has the ROI that is there, has a track record that makes them feel comfortable, and is proven with other customers and becomes stable, they'll have that choice, and the Tomorrow Now contract will put them in control to make that decision. If the customer wants to go outsource it and never buy an ERP solution, that's fine. If they want to go to SAP, that's fine. If they want to go to Microsoft, we don't say what they can do. We don't say you can go to this vendor. We say you can do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. In fact, we don't care. What we care about is being the last friend of these production systems until you tell us to turn the lights out.
At a certain point, your strategy is probably going to have to change, seeing that Fusion will come out at some point.
When version 7 came out, you know, at some point we started supporting PeopleSoft version 7. We only have a couple customers on version 7 today. We still have a thriving, growing business because new releases came out. As long as, you know, that's the beauty in the relentless march of software towards stabilization, hopefully, if you have a well-run system that becomes premier. In the well-run march of stabilization and maturing of the applications industry, a larger and larger segment of that pie becomes more open and interested in third-party support. Ironically, the fact that they're very content with these systems that they've spent millions and millions on and want to get an ROI from that, that's exactly why they're looking for someone who can extend the life of those releases, provide support that is more appropriately geared towards mature and stable systems, not towards the latest new products that come out, you know, and get support that doesn't have a conflict of interest with forcing people towards those releases because they're quite happy with the release they have today. Okay, there's nothing in our support that limits them, that forces them to, you know, go to a different release. We put them in control. So sure, you know, the 7.0 is not around today. In 10 years, you know, version 8.9 may not have a big footprint. But as long as their software continually coming out and it's as mature and stable, we will be the premier alternative to vendor support in the enterprise software industry.
Mm-hmm. The Siebel announcement again.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that, you said that Siebel customers could save up to 50%, I think.
They can save at least 50%.
Explain to me how you arrive at that.
Very easily. We ask the customer to basically promise that what they're paying, and we say divide by half. Mm-hmm. They agree as a part of their agreement with us that the amount that they're paying represents close to half of what they're paying today. Okay. We don't look at their contracts. We don't look at their invoices. You know, we trust our customers. We ask them to divide by two, and they sign that as a part of their agreements with us.
Sounds almost too simple.
Isn't that beautiful? You know, the keep it simple model works very well in this business. We don't spend, you know, we don't have 70 employees at our company working to calculate what maintenance should be for customers. We say, you tell us, divide by two. Make it easy enough for me to understand, and I'm sure it'll be easy enough for us to market it to the executives. The CFOs that want to understand the value can understand, divide by two, get off the forced march of upgrades, and get a support solution that's more appropriate for mature and stable software. Very easy value proposition.
You have offices in what, in Singapore?
Sydney, Australia, Singapore, Netherlands, in Amsterdam, in the Thames River Valley outside of London, in Reading and Maidenhead, as well as mentioned the Research Triangle, Denver, Atlanta, our headquarters in Texas, in Bryan, Texas. We also have offices in Houston, Texas, as well as San Francisco and Pleasanton.
Do you outsource at all any of your support staff to Bangalore, India? Or?
Nope. We don't believe that is appropriate at all for third-party support. You need a premier solution. When someone calls with a serious issue, you need strong communication skills, strong understanding of what's making that person tick. Part of what differentiates us is that every client, as a standard part of their service with us, gets a named primary support engineer. That person, during that customer's business hours, wherever those may be around the world, our model is for the primary support engineer to be the one that answers the phone 90% or better of the time, who gets to know that customer's business patterns, operational patterns, technical environment, the whole thing. These are product experts, not just business. I mean, it's great to have a business manager, but it's someone who's a relationship manager who also is a product expert, who we hope 20% of the time resolves the customer's issue right on the phone there before they ever have to go and follow up within that first hour. That's something that you can't do. You can't develop that virtual relationship and provide this unbelievable support level if you're doing it, frankly, in some of the areas that others are outsourcing to today.
Help me understand something. And I know I asked this question, a similar question, just a little bit ago. But how many of the new customers that you brought on board, you said many of them, or the majority of them, are staying with just support. They haven't been turned over to via Safe Passage. How many actually were turned over to Safe Passage via the Safe Passage program?
We let SAP talk about the Safe Passage solution because it ties into the financial world there. As a subsidiary of SAP, I can't tell you the Safe Passage numbers. You'll have to get that data from SAP. If there's some data that we can get you that's public, I'll do that. And that's why we can't. I can tell you, though, that the majority of our deals that we signed this last year were Tomorrow Now standalone deals that did not involve Safe Passage support. But customers that are very open to it. So, you know, the value to Tomorrow Now for SAP, there's still some good value to them, even when we, you know, consistently put customers in control of that decision. They've at least made a decision that they're not going to be putting revenue in one of their competitors' pockets. They've, you know, in many ways we've unplugged them from having a home field advantage so that maybe it is 5 years down the road before they want to talk to SAP. But now they're going to talk to SAP, you know, more on a neutral footing because they're using a third-party support provider.
Now, we're still focused on the U.S. market, obviously. But are the majority of your new customers since the merger coming from Germany?
No, the majority are still here in North America. I think it's just more a reflection of how long we've been at it. Okay. I think we've seen the same results in Asia and in Europe as we saw in North America our first year. If you'll recall, we just announced in May of last year that we were going to go internationally. And since then, we've built in offices in Europe and throughout Asia Pacific. We've got local contracts. I mean, that said, it's not as though we haven't been doing very well there. We've got local PeopleSoft and JD Edwards customers, both local contracts in Australia and New Zealand, which is considered one sort of major market, and then mainland Asia Pacific as well. Okay. We've got blue chip client names that you'd recognize in those markets. The same in Europe, in the UK, in Germany, in the Netherlands, in Spain, in Italy. So we're doing very well. But the majority are still North America because we've been at it for several years here.
Who would come in next after North America?
Europe would come in first. We launched our support out in Asia Pacific in September, June. We launched it. We were going to do it September. We actually started executing out there. But even there, we've got half a dozen customers where we've signed local contracts. That's not a bad number at all for the first 6 months.
Your foundation really has been with PeopleSoft.
We launched PeopleSoft in 2002. We launched J.D. Edwards last year, December of 2004.
What was behind the thinking of going with J.D. Edwards second and then building in Siebel?
Well, you know, some of the board members of the Quest Independent Advisory Board at the time called us and said, hey, you know, I think it was Delane Bender and others, mm-hmm. Who came to us and said, you're doing this for PeopleSoft. We have the exact same value proposition. We have customers who have the same needs. Why not us? So they asked to talk with us at the, I think it was the 2004 Oracle User Group in San Francisco. So we agreed to talk to them. They came and spoke to some of the members of the board, came and talked to us, and we said, here's the things that we would need to go into launch. At the time, we were very focused on really proving out and expanding our PeopleSoft solution, but we understood long-term that it made sense for us to expand into more product lines and to demonstrate that this wasn't sort of a one software line wonder, but this is really something that could be done across the board. So we agreed to do it for One World. We added World a month later, and so this is our fourth software line, but it certainly won't be our last.
What were the initial challenges when you launched the support for J.D. Edwards, and how have you addressed them with Siebel?
Well, I think we learn new things every day, and we certainly learn new things as we try to take our methodologies and our systems and drive them across software lines wherever it makes sense without forcing it when it doesn't. It brings us great efficiency, and so what we've, you know, primarily I think what we've learned is to be open to do things differently whenever it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Have you made a profit for SAP at this point?
We cannot talk, we're not allowed to talk about our finance. It's been the same since our acquisition in January 19th, so I don't think SAP breaks ours out, but let's just say we're certainly confident that we're making a good contribution for SAP.
That concludes this interview with Tomorrow Now CEO Andrew Nelson. You can check out our previous podcasts at searchsap.com/audio. For now, I'm Rob Westerveld. Have a great day.